recommend people put it out on an app, because for anybody that's newer than Chandler and Chad, they're going to need to know that especially, how that's going to be and taken in, because I can't couldn't explain it myself to them. That's the reason why trying to find out something, just for, also on my sake, for curiosity. J-I-4-L-Z-I.
Andy, and like I said, since I find out, I'll put it on the net, and most everybody that reads the stuff on the computer knows about it as much as I do, and so maybe more, I don't know, but when I find out from the powers that be that, you know, they'll let us know what to do, and I'll let everybody else know. But thanks for asking, Andy, that's a good question.
What, J-I-4-L-Z-I?
4 NUE, net controller for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, and I appreciate you guys. I hope you guys got linked up and was able to. Well, Gary, appreciate the information. Andy, that was a good question. How about that? All right, I see a station up on Echo Link, so let me jump up there and grab that station. Echo Link stations and Echo Link stations only. Please call KO4 NUE.
KO4 NUE, please check in. Kilo November 4, Romeo Juliet November, John Brown Summit, no comment, no traffic.
Net would like to recognize KN4RJN, that's Mr. John up in Brown Summit. And John, appreciate you checking in with us tonight, sir. All right, any more stations, Alpha through Zulu, please call KO4 NUE.
Control. Please check in Whiskey Alpha 4 Kilo Charlie 1 Mopo in downtown Greenville. No traffic, no comment. Just listen. 73.
Chad, KI4DOS. I got you, Gary. Let me get Mr. Juan checked in and you can take it. Alright. Net would like to recognize Whiskey Alpha 4 Kilo Charlie. That's Mr. Juan mobiling around in Greenville. And Juan, you be careful out there tonight, sir. And appreciate you checking in with us. All right, Mr. Gary, go ahead and take it. What's your question?
I'll just say hey to Juan and Carolina and the rest of his family. Hadn't seen him in a while. The question is, did you get that last text message I sent you?
I did. I sure did. But we can do something else.
Just let me know. That won't be a problem. But I'll let you turn it back over to you and let you carry on with it. Sound like you got a real good net going. Appreciate you calling it. And again, tell Miss Anna we said hello. And Joy hollered in here and said, tell her kindred spirit hello.
Hello back. And she's already crawled in the bed. Dealing with this jet lag, so she's just gonna have to holler from the bed to the radio. So she said, "Hello, Miss Joy." All right. Well, I'll give you a call, Gary. We'll get it worked out. Any more stations, Alpha through Zulu, please call KO4NUE. Have I missed anyone for comments or rag to you? Please call KO4NUE.
I was just going to stick around for comments real quick. Glad Anna made it back and wanted to let her know that I actually know that book she was talking about, The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom. That was one that my family had read when we were little. Very familiar with that story. And that's so neat that she was up there.
Took some pictures. Her and my daughter was actually was in the room, the hiding place where they hid some of the Jews in the home, and thought that was, well, I'm not sure that's a good thing to be proud of, but I mean, it's just kind of neat to be, you know, I thought that was really neat to be able to experience some history like that, and to be there where, I'm not exactly sure how to word that. I mean, point. It just kind of neat and sad all in the same time, you know. But yeah, I am familiar with Corey Ten Boom. I'm gonna tell you, that is one very respected young, very respected woman. That took a lot of courage, a lot. And Anna bought a books on tape for me, so me and my cousin could listen to it on a road trip one time. And it's a very good book, but my goodness, you want to talk about difficulty? Oh my gosh, just what she went through and how she reacted to that. It's an amazing story, really.
Number, the Jews were hidden right underneath the table, and the Germans didn't even look underneath there, even though they were told that's where they were, and stuff like that. I believe they were under the ground under the table, and the Germans looked underneath the table, and they weren't there. And also, if I remember right, there was a stuffed animal. I'm going to say it was a stuffed bear, and it had fake jewels on it. They came through looking for diamonds or rubies or something. I can't remember, but there was a necklace of fake jewels on the bear, but the jewels that the Germans were looking for was actually inside the bear. Do I have the correct story on that?
Don't think so, Daniel, or at least not the... this was primarily about her life story and what she went through with hiding the Jews during during the time frame of World War II, and she had a the way the house was built, there was basically a fake room and a passageway into the room that she would actually hide the Jews in. But during the day, they maintained the house. They came and, you know, maintained the house, and she felt like it was important that everybody have something to do and occupy their minds. So she assigned chores and duties for everybody to do, and she had installed some buzzers so that when someone came to the door, she would put them in the hiding place. Eventually she was called and went to a concentration camp with her and her sister. And her sister died there at one of the concentration camps. And I think she has a very amazing story about forgiveness. Just a really powerful statement to say about how she viewed all of that nastiness during World War II, and how that made her into, you know, the woman that she was. It's very powerful. Very powerful story.
About it, I'll have to reread it sometime and catch up on it. We read a whole bunch of books about that stuff, so it's kind of easy for me to mix all those stories up.
So we got anything else, Mr. Daniel?
Not much. Just about done for the evening. Been hauling all this dirt out of the Bilo Center from Monster Truck Jam, and about to go home now. So I got one last load of dirt to haul to Piedmont, and that'll be it. And then I get to go home, do it all again tomorrow.
You working some long days, aren't you?
No. Sure am. Paycheck will finally be good. So that's about it, Chad. And I'll probably wrap it up so that you can get to bed yourself. Glad Miss Anna had a good time. Tell her I said hello, and we'll holler at her later on down the log, and I'll at you later on down the log too. Happy y'all are back together again. I'm sure you missed her. So KO4NUE in the net, KJ4WZM, 73-2, 73 is all net, and we'll catch you later.
I appreciate it, and you be safe, especially when you're a little bit tired. And I hope you have a good day tomorrow. and I'll let you go. All right, we'll try one more time. Have I missed anyone for comments or ragged you? Please call KO4NUE.
UE, KK4JBQ. This to say, it's been really nice to have you as our net control tonight. KK4JBQ.
I'll give you a call tomorrow. I appreciate that. All right, I'm going to go ahead and close it out and try to get a little bit of rest tonight. So this is KO4NUE for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Please stand by for my net report. Turn the repeater back to normal amateur use, 73 to all on the net, and it's been a pleasure to be your net controller tonight. This is KO4NUE, and I am clear.
JBQ. KI4LZI.
4LZI, KK4JBQ.
I don't know which month it was or what year, but there was something in the QST in years past about that over there that they was talking about over there. There was, and they used 40 meters, and the fact that, you know, everybody wasn't supposed to be on the air, they was able to communicate with the forces out of there to the Allied forces somehow via 40 meters. You remember reading that article in QST about that?
Since you mentioned it, that could be one of the places where I've seen information on spy radios over the years, and I can't remember exactly where I saw what. But the truth is, it was essential to get that information, and radio was the only way it could be done. Well, there were different means by which to hide what you were doing, you know. Of course, the radio was small, and the antenna was tiny. And I'm sure they used CW, perhaps, but don't you think they used some code and not just, you know, in the clear, using international Morse code? I mean, but it was essential for the war effort to have communication. And the fact that they did so with radios that were so small. Chad mentioned a radio. I have to think it was a receiving radio that was in a matchbox. Now, you know how big a matchbox is, going back that far. Kitchen matches were in boxes all the size that you might see crackers in them, you know, that size. It's just been a real interest of mine over many years, and I didn't make any notes, so I can't go back and refer to things as time goes along. That's one thing that I wish I had developed a habit to make notes about things that interested me over time, so that there'll be a time when I can't remember anything. I'm sure that's coming. But to have it written down somewhere so I could just review it and, you know, entertain myself. It's awful to get old, Andy. Don't you dare do it. KK4JBQ.
Well, I am to a degree. I can't remember what month and what year, other than sometime in the past I remember reading in that in one of the QSTs about that. They first started with bigger radios and realized that that wasn't going to work and be able to keep it hid. Instead, they compromised and made the smaller type setups They were very, very, the way I remember reading that article, very, very, let's put it this way, broad-banded. They'd pick up about anything. But being that everybody wasn't supposed to be legally able to transmit then, that kind of compensated for it to a degree. Well, on the other end, on the Allied end, they was using the good stuff at the time, and they was able to pull them through on that. Like I said, I'm sure I remember reading it in some QST here in the past about that very thing, because they showed a desk about the size of a, I don't know how you'd say it, a rectangle-type box where the smaller radio was in. And it looked like it was on a desk, but it, you know, it didn't give away. You wouldn't know right offhand that it was actually that. I'm sure I remember seeing that in QST sometime in the past.
I do remember one other thing now that we're talking about it. My mind would not have gone in this direction if it hadn't been for your... for this conversation. But, let's see. Robert, WR8RW, and I went to, it has to be 3-4 years ago now, went to the Ham Fest in Lawrenceville. I believe that's in Georgia. Went over there, and very interesting, I thought, different kinds of things than what you see at the Upstate Ham Fest. A different setting, of course, but so much tables and tables and tables of used equipment. Now, some of it was older equipment, and some of it was very unique. I saw radios that came out of the bombers that were used in World War II to drop bombs, and they were tube radios. But they were so compact and so small, it was hard to believe that they worked reliably, you know. But of course they did. And they took them out of the planes, and they were offering them for sale. Now, maybe they worked, maybe they didn't. You give them the right power, and maybe they would work, or maybe they wouldn't. But just to have something like that... kind of amazing, and I'm sure that's where I saw the first spy radio that I ever laid my eyes on. It was in a little box that had a wooden lid, but it didn't open. The lid was in a channel, and you slid it to one side. And when you slid it to one side, the controls were right underneath, and they were tiny little controls. This was a transmitter. So, you can have a small receiver, oh yeah, but a transmitter's another animal. And they built it into a little box that you might see, sewing thread in or something like that. It was just so tiny. And necessity makes for some strange stuff sometimes. It was very necessary to communicate, and the whole world was, you know, the whole world was at war. Little skirmishes like we've known in our lifetime, you and me, it doesn't compare to every nation on Earth being at war with one another. KK4JBQ.
I'm sure I remember reading that about that in QST at one point in time, about that they're talking about there. I know you've heard me mention that about RadioBoulevard.com. You ever looked at that site? They show a lot of the World War II stuff that was in use back then on that site there, RadioBoulevard.com. And one thing we've all of today got to understand, this solid state gear here can't take high SWR at all. You'll burn it up, or it'll cut back on the power to protect it. But back looking to finals, though, is a whole lot more lenient and loose when it comes to standing wave. It can take a lot higher standing wave vacuum tube finals than solid state can.
That's just the nature of a tube. A tube is a high impedance device. I know that's the word that Chad doesn't like, but it really is an important word. A tube is high impedance, so it will not be affected. So it just in no way is it affected in the same way that solid state components are affected by that. A solid state final will it's low impedance, so that mismatch, which is what we're talking about here, that mismatch, the antenna and the radio, it just destroys them. It's, you know, it's the part that blows up, and and it does so sometimes in a fantastic way. They will pop really loud sometimes. I've heard this. I've only heard it said that they will pop if you key down with, you know, an awful impedance mismatch. To tune the antenna with any device is just to establish a match. And the price you pay when you retune a transmitter to a mismatched antenna, the price you pay is the signal loss. It just cuts your radiated signal by many factors, sometimes by 100, you know. Imagine if you used one of these in-fed antennas where the impedance is 50 ohms, it's 4,000 ohms. And the radio just sees that and gives up right now. It just gives up. I remember when I first got my HF rig that's still in a box, I was so paranoid about blowing the radio up. I can remember that was the only thing I thought of for maybe 2 weeks. Every time I keyed that thing, I was afraid I would burn it up because of the, you know, it being transistor. And that's, I mean, it's fine. It probably weighs 7 or 8 pounds, where the older radios would weigh upwards of 100 pounds. So it's a lot nicer to have solid state just for that. KK4JBQ.
Well, see, there's pluses and minuses on both sides, but I know on that RadioBoulevard.com website, everything from the Second World War, about everything you can imagine that was used is on that site. Here, and best I remember, cause it's been a little bit since I've been on it, there was some gear that was used by Allies that was also shown on that site. It ever bit, of course, being the time it was, the vacuum tube gear. And some of the old timers, Ray was one and many others that's been dead for years that used to get on here. I remember them always saying, those old timers here on this repeater, that all that vacuum tube gear, you know, has a lot more leniency with your standing wave than what all this here is. And there's no doubt that's correct. And some of those makeshift situations, like I remember reading in QST years ago, where they couldn't use the proper type setup and they had to make it small. You know, it had to be very, very lenient when it comes to the standing wave issue. It had to be. Because it's, in some of those type of compromising situations, there's no way you could have got standing wave down real good, not to mention there wasn't all that many transmatches available then. You had to have the smarts enough to come up with it yourself, and You might be able to do it, but, you know, I don't know that even I've got a brain enough to be able to build my own transmix properly.
I understand it. I don't think you'd have a terrible difficulty with it, Andy. It's simply a combination of the right value of an inductor and a capacitor. Any transmatch is made up of an inductor and a capacitor. You choose the right values, and the first one's probably what you're talking about there. The first ones were a set value capacitor and a set value inductor. And that worked for that antenna and that rig. And maybe that's all you needed to do. We've gotten in our heads, I think some of us do, I admit to it myself. We want not just one antenna that works fine on two or three bands. We want seven or eight antennas. This is the dream of every ham. We want seven or eight antennas, and we just have switches to switch the rigs and the antennas so that we get the right combination. And use one antenna tuner or antenna matcher, is really what it is. And we use one for every one of them. Whereas back in the past, they used a dedicated set of a matched inductor and capacitor. And it stayed at the base of the antenna or maybe near the feed point. And it made that antenna work with that rig. Simple as that. And you can still make it. I mean, the fact that it works hasn't changed. But we want a device in an antenna tuner that'll work on any antenna. We don't know what antenna we might want in the future. And so it has to be adjustable, and that's what makes them complicated, very complicated. Brian, I think you would have no problem if you understood how the impedance changing took place between the capacitor and the inductor. And unfortunately, that takes a good bit of math, at least three or four lines of math to get the thing right. KK4JBQ.
KI4LCI. Well, that's kind of what flubbed me up 12 or 13 years ago in extra. All those advanced algebra formulas. I come within three back in getting it, but all that advanced math algebra just shot me. Let's put it this way, it shot me over the rainbow, and I ain't that good at advanced algebra. You're right about that. I know it can be done. It's just that I'm not good at advanced algebra, is my problem. But with those vacuum tubes of that time back then, you know, you could have had probably a 4 or 5 to 1 SWR. And some of that vacuum tube stuff, it would have withstood it. This stuff today, though, as we all know, you better think again.
Right. 5 to 1 would have been no problem at all. I think tubes would handle a 10 to 1 standing wave ratio, no problem. Yeah. But we do have what we have, and it's kind of cool to know that you're, well, you know, if there is a mismatch, and even if tubes would allow that mismatch to go through without damaging the equipment, you still have the losses, the power loss that a mismatch causes. Today, what we aim to do to keep from damaging our equipment is to get the match antenna to radio, get the match so that there is no damage. But in as much as the components that are used in modern tuners are very effective and efficient, you limit the loss by doing the tuning. You get more power out of the antenna. You know, and it doesn't matter from your microphone to the other person's, whoever you're having a CUSA with, to his speaker. That's a long path, and a lot is going on. And the more efficient that you can make your transmission, well, the more likely you'll have a CUSO at all. I listen to a number of people, especially with CW, because I'm really trying to get that under my cap. The more effective, the more efficient your antenna is, the more likely you'll make the contact in the beginning. You just won't hear anybody. If your antenna is so lossy that 5% of the power, 5% of 100 watts is 5 watts. And we're right back down to QRP levels, you know. So you want to be efficient. Turn it into radio waves. Yeah. Well, Andy, my little handheld here just telling me that it's tired and it wants more. It wants to recharge. I about worn this battery out. You have a good night, won't you? It's been a good night on the radio. It's mighty good to hear Chad whenever he calls the net, but I don't know how many Sundays he's ever called, but anyway, it's fine to talk with him and to talk with Anna. That was a real joy for me. And great to have that family back together again. Get yourself some good rest, Andy. I know it's about time for you to take your insulin, and you have a peaceful night's rest, will you? KK4JBQ, I'll be clear on your final. Good night.
I know you've seen that article in the current QST. Maybe you can come up with 10 or 20 or 30 potatoes and somehow tie them in line and get enough voltage to power an HT. They're on very low power. I'm sure you read that article. I remember something about it, but I was thinking what I remember from way back decades ago was a tomato, but they showed there it was a potato they're doing it. See, and he actually, that guy there, actually was getting it operated on very low power somewhere on the HF band, so KK4JBQ, KI4LZI.
Funny, Andy. Have yourself a good night's rest. KK4JBQ, I'm clear.